Every advisor has had that experience when you meet with a prospect and you have a great appointment. And at the end, when you're kind of feeling them out on whether or not you're going to meet again or they're going to choose you, right? You get that statement, well, I'm going to interview several other advisors. And what do we do about it? The good news is that if you go first or towards the beginning, you really get to set the bar for what other advisors have to meet, right? They have to be able to meet or exceed the expectations that you've built and created for the clients. The bad news is when you go first, you miss the opportunity to give rebuttals or clarify your position or your stance or your offering. So in today's episode, we're going to dive into some proactive and reactive strategies that you can use to become the obvious choice. And whether this is your 92nd episode of The Efficient Advisor, or you've literally just stumbled across this podcast, I know you're here because you know it's possible to have energy left over for your family and still have your dream business. You know, the business that you are running instead of it running you. So if you are new to The Efficient Advisor, welcome. I'm Libby Greiwe, and I started, built, and sold by age 37, a 100% referral-only planning practice, and I grew it to seven figures as a solo advisor, all while working just 3 days a week and taking off 14 weeks a year. And no, I didn't actually buy a business. So I did it organically while working part-time. And I think this is totally possible for anyone and everyone. So I'm here just to walk alongside you and to show you how to do exactly the same thing and to really help you just take immediate action on the most important strategies for scaling, organizing, creating less stress and overwhelm in your business. So move over exhaustion, move over advisor ADD. It is time to take that one right next step to build a business and a life that you love. Okay, so let's dive into this whole idea of a prospect interviewing multiple advisors. So this has actually come up in a lot of my one-on-one coaching sessions lately, and we've been talking through different strategies, and I thought, you know what? I think everyone would like to be refreshed and know that it's not only them, right? I think sometimes my objective behind The Efficient Advisor is to just normalize the experience. Because here's what I think happens. You and I, we're on the inside, right? We are on the inside of the financial advising world. We are on LinkedIn. We are on Facebook. We listen to podcasts. We hear what all of these other advisors are doing. We see all of these success stories. And I sometimes think that it's important for us to remember, like, oh, we are seeing the highlight reels. And I know you hear that all the time with social media and it's kind of overplayed, but it's so true. I think we sometimes assume that, well, gosh, a prospect goes to meet with, you know, that advisor. And of course, they're just going to say yes, because they're totally amazing. And they seem to have their crap together and they're doing, you know, value adds, and they've got a big team and a fancy YouTube channel. And this literally happens to everybody. So I coach advisors who are making, you know, $250,000 a year in revenue, all the way up to, you know, $3, $4 million. And this happens to every single advisor at every single level that you're in. And it doesn't matter if you're with a broker dealer, it doesn't matter if you're a hybrid, it doesn't matter if you're an RIA, every advisor experiences this. Right? And prospects aren't to blame. They're doing their due diligence. Anytime you're going to be making a major change in your life, you are going to get opinions, right? I know for me, right? Like I call girlfriends, I call, business mentors. I ask my mom and dad. You know, we're always going to want to get a couple of people's opinions or feedback before we do something dramatic. And for a lot of people, hiring a financial advisor or committing to an annual fee, or maybe they've been doing it themselves and they've been, you know, really excited about their low cost structure, and now they're going to be adding in some management expenses. It's a big deal for a lot of people. And I think we sometimes tend to forget that. So we know it's going to happen. So the best thing we can do is be prepared. So there are a couple of different strategies that we've been talking about lately in the coaching, and I just wanted to share them with you. So let's talk proactive. One of the things that you can do with a client when they're sitting across from you and you have this really great meeting and you're like, yep, they totally love me, I totally love them, we'd make a great fit, and they drop the, you know, multiple advisor bomb on you, the best thing you can do, or one of the things that you can do, I shouldn't say the best, but one of the things that you can do is go ahead and set a circle back time with them right there and then. And you can say, hey, that's so great. I think that's smart that you're doing your due diligence. You know, just like anything else, there's a million different ways to skin a cat and to do this, you know, to do financial advice. So I think that's really great. And as you interview advisors, you know, you client, you're going to learn more and more. And I'd like to be able to answer any new questions for you that come up. Can we schedule a time to chat? So set a circle back time. Another thing that you can do, and I love this one, is to give them a list of questions for them to take and ask other advisors. Now, I'm literally talking about like a 2-page, you know, or a printed document that you can hand them and say, oh my goodness, this happens all the time. You know, again, I think this is really great, right? We're complimenting them that they're doing a really great thing. And you can say, I have some questions, you know, that are just really designed for people who are interviewing multiple advisors so that you can ask the right questions. And, you know, being on the inside, I think these are really important questions to ask. And you provide them a copy of this document that they can take with them. And of course, the next question you're going to ask is, well, Libby, what kind of questions should I put on this document? So, duh, of course, we're going to get into that. You know how I feel about giving tactical advice that you can literally implement, and I'm not going to leave you hanging to try to figure this out on your own. I know, especially at the beginning of the year when you're doing all the goal setting and you're doing all the things, sitting down to work on something and staring at a blank piece of paper is challenging, right? So I'm going to give you a few. You're going to want to come up with your own. And as I go through these, you're going to really want to think about like, well, what are the questions that would actually highlight me and my office? Maybe don't include the ones that might be perceived as a mark against you or maybe a little bit more negative. So for example, if you're a solo advisor without any support team, you might not want to have a question on there about, well, like what happens if you're on vacation and I have a need, right? So pick and choose questions that really, really highlight what it is that you do. And bonus points for those of you who have this list of questions for advisors and include your own answers. So you have a document that has a question and then your answer or your stance or how you and your firm would handle it, charge, etc. Okay, so let's just dive into these questions. And I want you to think too, as I go through this, you know, we're wanting to include questions that might not be like a client's first thought. So you're not going to want to include kind of the super duper obvious questions like, how long have you been doing this? Or, you know, things like that. So we're wanting to only put, right, because we don't want to dilute our message. If we're trying to highlight and give these people some really good meaty questions to ask, we are going to want to just include the ones that matter most. So while I'm going to give you a bunch of examples, and you're going to, of course, think of 1,000 on your own, you know, just keep in mind that if we're telling them like, hey, here's kind of some like insiders questions, we don't want it to be super obvious. Okay. So one of the questions that I always told people to ask, or I really like for clients to ask the advisor is, and these are in no particular order, but asking about, so something that we did really well in our office was tax analysis. And we used to like to ask the question or have clients ask the question, is tell me about the tax planning that you do with your clients. Do you do tax analysis? And if so, how often? So then you could have a little blurb underneath this question that's, we think taxes are an incredibly massive component to any client's financial picture. And part of our job as financial advisors is to continually look for opportunities for you as life changes, as tax code changes, and as we make adjustments in your plan. And this is then like where, you know, so you could go on and put like a, you know, a little bit larger of a paragraph. But when you're talking to your clients, if you do tax planning, you can say, you know, and we think it's really important to have your taxes on file. We keep them in this really cool tax software that we use. So that way, anytime we make a decision, we know anytime you make a decision or anytime we make a decision, there's typically going to be some sort of tax consequence, whether it's now or later. And we want to be able to make sure that we understand what that tax consequence is before we make the call. So making sure that you have this as a question to ask an advisor is really important. And yes, you can go through this sheet with the client. So, hey, I just want to make sure I've answered all of these questions for you and that you have this as a guide for you as you kind of go out into the world. This whole process just makes you look really, really confident and really, really amazing. So another question that should be on your list or could be on your list is, will your recommendations be subjective or objective? And then you could have a little blurb under there, you know, about how you have open architecture and you have access to lots of products and services, or will the advice or recommendations that you're given be subjective to what products and services you are able to sell? So for those of us in the broker-dealer world, this is a little bit more challenging of a question. However, you should maybe not have it on your list, or maybe you should if you feel super confident about it. But, you know, and I know most broker-dealers now have a little bit more open architecture and access to a lot of different products and services. So put that on there, right? Like if you think the services that you recommend are amazing, yeah, you could even say, and while I'm limited to X, Y, and Z products and services, we will only be making recommendations that actually match your needs. And we have plenty of resources and alternative options to send you to should one of our products or services not be the absolute best fit. I'm just kind of riffing on stuff, but you know, this is then where you could explain to clients like how you do objective planning and your recommendations would be. So we would always say, you know, I will recommend, let's say you need $400,000 in term, 20-year term. And then I would say, and we can also then offer you a subjective recommendation of the different term insurance policies that we represent or that we can work with. So we will actually offer you both. Another great question on there to ask the advisor is, how frequently will you interact or coordinate with my attorney or my CPA? Again, you know, phrase it whatever makes sense to you. Like, are you willing to? Are you able to? How frequently? What kind of interaction do you have with my attorney and CPA? A lot of advisors really don't do this part of their business. So this could be another area that makes you look super duper amazing. Another great question to have on your list is asking if the advisor really does comprehensive or holistic planning. And I hate those terms because they're kind of industry focused, and frankly, they're kind of like, what does that even mean? So you could ask the question in the way of, will your recommendations cover all of these areas? And you could list them out. And then this is where you could say, well, as you know, as a CFP or a financial planner or a fee only, you know, whatever, my job is to coordinate every aspect or to look at all aspects of your financial life and make sure that everything is working in tandem and that the right hand is talking to the left hand. So if you work with us, you really won't need to have multiple different advisors. Or let's say you are an absolute hard no on tax planning. You could say, I do this, 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 and this. However, I will coordinate with your CPA on all things taxes. And if you don't have a CPA, I've got a, you know, long list of recommendations for you. So, you know, asking if their advice will be comprehensive in nature, cover multiple different financial planning tenets, or if it's going to be limited to one or two different, topics. Another great question that my friend Matt Jarvis asks on his document is, how many clients do you serve? And how does their situation compare to mine? So I loved when I saw this. I was like, ooh, great question, Matt, because I think our clients too want to know, do you work with people like me? Do your clients have the complexity that I have? Especially if you're working up market, people want to know, like, are you working with other wealthy people? Are you working with other business owners? Are you working with other doctors? Do you understand the complex needs that I have and all the intricacies? And let's be honest, everyone likes to think that they're unique and that their situation is extra complex. And you know what? Sometimes they are, but this is then a great opportunity for you to be super clear with who your ideal client avatar is, who your ideal client is, what are the qualitative and quantitative qualities about them, and great, let the client self-select. So something else I'm sure I'll mention in the episode is, if they don't ultimately choose you because they don't like some of the answers to these questions, that's okay. That's your client's self-selecting, and you really only want to work with people who are a terrific fit. And I know for those of you who are early on in your careers and you're like, no, I will take literally anybody who has a heartbeat and a checkbook. I get that. I remember that. I feel that deep, deep, deep down in my bones. And know that at some point you will want only clients that bring you joy and have needs for the type of planning that you love, 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 love to do. At some point that will become critically important. Okay, let's blow through some other questions. I think asking about what is a cost? Like, what do you charge for planning? What is the range of your investment fees? Can I see your fee schedule? Questions about cost structure, I think, are really important and clients appreciate that. I love this too, asking a question about what happens when you're on vacation. Do you have a succession plan? What does communication look like with you, and how can I expect a follow-up, or how quickly can I expect to be able to get a hold of you, or how quickly can you turn around things to me, right? We want to be very clear about what your expectations are as a client and what my expectations are as an advisor. And we don't want to make false promises, right? Like, oh yeah, I can turn around that. I will return your call in an hour. If that's not the case, this gives you an opportunity to talk about how amazing your team is and how there's somebody in the office Monday through Thursday from this time to this time, and the office is closed on Fridays, blah, 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 blah. Just be really transparent and clear. Then this one I think is important, and more important for you to have buttoned up and buckled down than anything else. But what are the steps in your planning process? And most advisors, not you, because you listen to this show, and I'm sure you've listened to episode, I think number 62, that talks about productizing your process. But most advisors don't have a very clearly defined process. Even though you and I all know, because again, we're on the inside, we know that typically it looks something like, we talk about your goals and dreams, we gather your data, we analyze your data. Sometimes we put that in software, sometimes we don't. But based on that information, we provide you recommendations, you implement the recommendations, and then depending on whether you do or don't, we then manage that moving forward. So you and I know that happens, but not every advisor does a really great job articulating that to a client. And then bonus points for those of you who have named your process, really defined your process, put your process on your website. You've narrowed down like steps in your process, what the deliverables are. Episode number 62 is all about productizing your process and making your service offering so clear that it's super easy to sell, but more importantly, super easy for people to buy. When people aren't exactly sure what they're getting. So if it feels and looks and smells kind of similar at a lot of different places, and then one person kind of stands up and says, here is our exact process, and it has a name, and it's super fancy, and it seems really defined, and there's very clear deliverables at each stage, right? If you have a very good productized service offering, you will be more attractive to clients. End of story. I'll fight you on LinkedIn if you don't agree with me. No, just kidding. I don't want to fight anyone on LinkedIn. But I certainly do grab popcorn and sit and watch those conversations flow. Another great question to include on this document is for the client to ask the advisor, tell me about how I can, like, where will I go to see and view my accounts? Will I be able to see everything all in one location? What kind of platform? What does the client interface look like? And I know that one seems a little kind of like over the top, but if you have, this is great for you to explain like who your custodian is and how you can, so maybe you use MoneyGuide Pro. You could explain, yeah, we have this program and it updates. You can link all of your accounts and you can literally see everything in one location. Or, you know, a lot of financial institutions don't have that type of capability. So this might be a chance for you to say, yeah, like we use this, this, and this, and you're able to see this and this. You're able to get your own tax forms. You're able to do blah, 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 where maybe another advisor that they're interviewing doesn't have quite as robust of a tech stack, or maybe it's a little bit more antiquated and can't do all of the things that yours is capable of. Okay, so questions like that. So I don't want to spend the entire episode literally just on this document, but I do think having a document like this that you can email, but I think even better, literally having it, you know, printed, two-side, glossy, pretty piece of paper that you can hand them when they walk out the door, that they could carry into another advisor's office, or that they'll flip through when they get home, I think is a super classy way of articulating your value. Okay, another proactive strategy that will set you apart from other advisors is to send a handwritten thank you card. So I always will get this question is, well, Libby, you told us that every single time a client did business with you, you wrote them a card. And the answer is yes, that's absolutely true-ish. I didn't always write the card. Most of the time it was my team. All of the time it was my team. The only cards that I wrote were ones to prospects. And I do think this is worth your time, right? Getting new clients is a critically important piece of your business. So you have the 5 minutes to handwrite it. Because especially I say this to male clients all the time, right? And I hate to stereotype, and I feel like I just set women back a decade or so, but stereotypically, your handwriting, as a male, does not look like a female's handwriting. So if you are a female advisor and you have a male staff person writing the thank you cards, or vice versa, it's going to look a little weird. So in your own hand, even if you have crappy handwriting, I don't care. It's the thought that counts. Take the minute or two to write them a note. And yes, you can have a template for this so you don't have to think of something fresh every time. However, it is nice to include something that makes it feel very personal to the client, like you remembered something specific about them, or like maybe they were leaving on a vacation. And you close with, you know, and have an amazing time in Italy and eat all the gelato to your heart's content. But yes, I'll get that pushback that it's not worth your time to write. You know, I think that's wrong. I always think it's worth your time to send a thank you to prospects. Then the fourth strategy here is to add them to your nurture sequence. So, you know, I'm going to guess that most prospects are probably not on this like crazy quest to interview 8 financial advisors within the next 5 days and then make their decision. More often than not, it's going to be a slow process because people are busy. So nurture them, put them on a nurture sequence where they're going to get valuable information from you specifically related to whatever problem it is that you are solving. So value add, not just like a, hey, you came in 2 weeks ago, want to follow up with you, doing an actual true nurture sequence. And if you're like, Libby, I don't know what a nurture sequence is and I have no idea what you're talking about, you can check out episode number 21, how to follow up without sounding desperate. Great episode on how to build an effective nurture sequence. Okay, we're going to keep going. Another thing that we can do that's post-meeting is maybe just send them a nice email, you know, a week or two out, whatever kind of your normal follow-up-y timeframe would be, with an article or an attachment or something of, you know, specific to something that you discussed. So something that would add value but geared towards them and is not a pre-written kind of more generic email, but something very specific and very directed at them. And, you know, you can always predetermine what this is. As soon as they walk out the door, you can say, okay, they asked a lot about something related to taxes. Okay, maybe it was Roth conversions, or no, let's do something even more specific like charitable gifting. Qualified charitable distribution. Still talk. Let's say they came in and they were wanting to work on a generosity plan. You could send them at the end of the meeting, you make a note to your team, hey, 2 weeks from now, send them an email on my behalf with an article on qualified charitable distributions. Okay. The other strategy that we need to make sure that we are employing when a prospect says, well, I'm going to interview other advisors, is really exuding confidence and making it seem like you're not crushed, hurt, depressed, sad, disappointed to hear that you are so confident that they're going to come back to you, that it's like, oh, great. I think that's a great idea. We do that all the time for people. We're always willing to give a second opinion or just get, you know, some people like to just get a good housekeeping stamp of approval on work that they've already done with an advisor. I think that's great. Here, in fact, we think that's so great. Here is this list of questions that we've already prepared for you that we think will make your decision-making process easier. Again, you want to be the person who is entering a conversation that's already happening in their heads. You want to be that Ritz-Carlton concierge who is anticipating their needs before they even know that they have them. And by having something like this, I do think that's concierge level service that we talk about, right? Like this is the, oh, hey, I want to help you on the quest, not just, you know, make you choose me, but here's some resources for you to help you make a great decision. I love that. Okay. And something else that I want you to keep in mind, you know, I mentioned earlier, people self-select, great. If they're not a good fit for you, if the answers to the questions that you have posed for financial advisors, if your answers aren't a good fit for them, great. You are saving yourself a lot of trouble and a lot of headache in the future. And I know you hear that all the time, like, oh, it's great if they, you know, you want your clients to self-select. And, you know, again, like sometimes you're thinking, yeah, I know, but like, I'm also trying to make a living and I'm also trying to grow my book. And I also would love to have clients that I could pass off to another advisor someday. And yeah, all those things are true. And at the same time, you will be more passionate about the work that you do if you're doing exactly the work that you love with the type of people that appreciate and have a lot of gratitude for the services that you provide. So let them self-select, even if it's hard. Okay. So the other thing I want you to keep in mind as we wrap this up is that people are slow. In today's world, people are really freaking busy and they might have really good intentions about going seeing multiple advisors and they might not ever even actually do it. It might be a tactic that they're using just to like get out of your office and get into the car and have a conversation between the two of them. And people are just really busy. So here's the deal. The fortune is in the follow-up. That's one of my favorite, I think Jim Rohn quotes. It's one of my favorite quotes that, yeah, the fortune is in the follow-up. And for the advisors that actually follow up, and I don't mean just once and I don't mean just twice, but people who are initiating an actual follow-up process, and this is going to have to be a whole separate podcast, but other advisors might not follow up or follow up well. So make sure you are circling back and doing it multiple times. And I have this amazing book on following up and statistics related to like how many times you have to follow up before most people will respond or say yes or go, you know what? Yeah, great. Because here's the thing, like we always think we're just annoying the crap out of people. And here's the deal. If you're annoying the crap out of them, they'll block you. They will make a rule to send all of your emails to junk and you won't even know. But we're not annoying them often. Okay, so I'll give you an example. We used to host these white glove referral events is what we called them. And they were these really kind of special events that we used to host. And if you coach with me, you know what I'm talking about. But it's where 90% of the guests are prospects and they are just the hands down the best way to do referral business. Anyway, after those types of events, if we were following up with prospects that were there, we'd follow up a certain number of times. So we had a very set follow-up process. And then at the end, they would get what we called our lost cause letter. And it was something like, it was something like, hey, we've followed up, you know, two or three times since you attended our event back in February. You know, at this point, we really don't want to bug you. And, we have better things to do too. So if you have any interest, you know, in working with us in the future, you know, again, here's our contact information. It was super nice to meet you. Good luck. And I can't tell you how many times we sent out this lost cause letter 6 months later. a year later and people would call and go, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. I can't believe it's been that long. I've been wanting to do something with this and I'm so glad you sent that. So that to me was always kind of reinforcement that people need you to follow up with them. Most people, not all, but most people need a little kick in the pants here and there to actually get them to do the things that they said they were going to do, especially when financial planning, they know it's important, but maybe it's not a high priority, right? Just like everything in life. Sometimes you're so busy dealing with the tornado that you're in and handling the stuff that's right in front of your nose with the closest deadline that often you tend to neglect something. And for a lot of people, that's financial planning. So consider in your follow-up process having some sort of a, you know, whatever you want to call it. We called it the lost cause letter, but consider having some sort of lost cause letter. And I do think this worked really, really well for the referral events, but then also for workshops. Okay, so there you have it. There are 8 strategies that you can employ proactively or reactively when your prospect says, I'm going to interview several advisors. So my hope for you always is that you take 1 or 2 actionable things from each episode and implement them in your business right away. So whether that's writing a lost cause letter, whether that's creating a nurture sequence, whether that's creating a follow-up, whether that's going out and buying really cute thank you cards right away on Amazon. And oh, by the way, I think I have some of the ones that we used to buy listed on my website. I have a Libby's Favorite Things pages. Does it look like it's from 1994? Sure does. Have I updated it? Absolutely not. Does it still work? Yep. So it's fine. But you can go out there and I think we still have some different thank you card packages from Amazon and other kind of cool card places that we used to utilize. So you guys can grab those as well. But I just ask 1 or 2 super simple things. If you're ready to dive in or put it on your brain dump or add it to your CEO day to create this list of questions and implement it and give things a try and please let us know how it worked out for you over in the Efficient Advisor community. So we've got about 1,100 advisors in there right now, and it's fun. People are posting questions and answering and sharing workflows and tech stacks and all the things. So I'm super grateful for the participation that you guys are having over there. I'm also super active on LinkedIn, so I'd love for you to connect with me and DM me any questions that you have. And you guys are awesome. I hope this was a helpful episode. And go out there, follow up with the prospects, and don't forget that that's where the fortune is. So I'll talk to you next time.